Welcome back to the Film Experience Podcast. This is your host, Nathaniel. And once again, I'm joined by Katie Rich from Vanity Fair, Joe Reed from Decider, and Nick Davis from Nick's Flick Picks. We're going to jump back into the conversation we were having about Manchester by the Sea, and we will also be answering reader questions that you left us in the comments, which we really thank you for. We love the engagement. So hope you enjoy Manchester by the Sea, then reader questions. I know that we all have lots of La La Land skeptics here, apparently. Is it okay that I'm kind of a Manchester by the Sea skeptic, or do you all love it?
We don't all love it, but I do. I love it.
Does everybody else love
it? I like it?
Katie?
I like it, okay.
Guys, I promise I'm going to see it soon.
Oh, okay.
I got up this morning, and I thought about it, and I didn't have time to finish it, so I'm getting there. You know, you got to find the right time to, like, put your baby down and watch something emotionally devastating, and I'm working on it.
Yeah, I feel you.
Well, especially something like that, which, you know, yeah, for young parents, I can't imagine watching that as a young parent and feeling okay about spending the time doing that.
I survived Arrival, so I feel like I can do this, but
yeah,
I promise I will watch it before I finish my Critics' Choice voting. I vow.
We believe in you.
I mean, my thing with that one is, and it's like I'm trying not to overcorrect, like I'm complaining people do about La La Land, because I do think it's good, but I just, like, the amount of hosannas is alarming to me, because, like, even within Lonergan's filmography, which I realize is very small, to me it's like his least strong movie.
Well, yes. I agree. But his other two movies are You Can Count on Me and Margaret. Like,
right,
it's,
right.
You know, comparing it against those two is, you're always going to be up against it with that. I think the reasons why I like it so much are that it doesn't necessarily seem so out of place with those two other movies in the way that it takes a somewhat familiar setup and writes the characters that, particularly the Casey Affleck, Lucas Hedges characters, in ways that constantly sort of defy what my expectations were for the way that they were going to relate to each other. And I really like that. I thought all of the scenes between them are really sort of interestingly written. I think the dynamics between a lot of the different characters, when you bring in, like, you know, the other people from the town, the flashbacks with Kyle Chandler, even like the Gretchen Mol stuff is probably the weakest stuff because that's the stuff that plays out most like you're expecting it to. But I just think in general, it's a movie about a tragedy that feels like it's not like rubbing your nose in it or something. I don't know. It's weird to say that a movie like that is delightful because it's like, it's not. It's about like such a heavy topic. But like, I really walked out of it feeling buoyant in a way that I wasn't expecting to.
Wow.
Yeah,
that I'm also a wow on that statement. Like, I'm not someone who needs like typical catharsis. Like, I like movies that kind of leave you hanging, but I guess I've been surprised with how much people like this because it so actively resists catharsis because of the character arcs, or, you know, lack thereof, in terms of wrapping people's like lives up into some sort of emotional through line or emotional breakthrough. There's not that, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that I would agree with. I do feel like it comes to, I think there are arcs, and I think they definitely do come to a point at the end with those two main characters. I think with other ones, you know, Michelle Williams' character does sort of just, you know, leave, but the movie's not really about her. She's, you know, she has her big scene and whatever, but it's, I think the movie is very deliberately, you know, it's about the two, you know, the nephew and the uncle.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why I'm so resistant to that movie, but for all of its, like, qualities, I just have trouble, like, getting into it. Like, I also have trouble, like, I don't want to say buying it, but it doesn't, like, some of the acting to me, like, I thought Casey Affleck is amazing, but, like, I didn't really understand, like, Michelle Williams, I can't connect, I've had this problem with other, you know, very lauded performances by various people, but I can't really connect her beginnings of her character to the endings of the character. I can't really see the same person.
Well,
so I've been a little confused why she's like a some sort of front runner, because like I love her early scenes in the movie, but the later scenes, like it doesn't feel like the same character, and they feel like so much like acting scenes. Like, I don't know.
No, I see what you're saying.
Was I definitely... only one who was outside of this, or was everyone else deeply moved by it?
Well, Nick, you were on the fence, right?
Yeah, I mean, I saw it a second time, which, like, I was going to ask you, Joe, like, I know you just posted on Twitter yesterday or the day before that this is a movie to see a second time. Was that strongly an experience of yours that you got more interested in it?
Oh, no, I just, because people were saying yesterday that people shouldn't go see it, and I was like, we'll see it twice. Like, I was just being a...
Oh. Yeah, I think... I did like it a little bit better the second time, and I'm assigning it for my film group, so I just made the study sheet last night, which always makes me feel like I like movies better, because if you have to keep delving, like, you see stuff. But, no, I felt kind of outside it, and I felt there were aspects of it, like I never totally got in the swing of the chronological back and forth, like, that... often felt... Thank you, Charlie. Charlie and I feel the chronology.
He didn't get the swing either, guys.
I guess. Yeah, he was very clear on that. And the music seemed kind of overbearing. Like, there were aspects like that I guess I couldn't get totally into. I don't know. There's something, too, just about the... And this is just a taste thing, because I do like the movie. I was just trying to think about why it doesn't feel remotely like the experience of the other two. And you can count on me, I feel like, of the three movies, has the least obvious big scenes or sort of huge events. And the death of the parents is handled so succinctly at that beginning, and you just can tell that it's reverberating everywhere else, but is never, like, dredged up in a huge way. Mm-hmm. And then Margaret is obviously... hyper-dramatizing this huge thing that happens to her, but the whole thing is about, like, how are you supposed to react to that, and is she doing it too much, and, like, how big a thing is this, really? And something about the calamity in this movie just felt so big that I guess I reacted to it as not stock, exactly, but it just felt like a really heavy load to put on a character in a movie that nobody's reactions to it totally surprised. I don't know what to say. It didn't make me rethink what that experience would be like. Or what it might mean. So, like, the way that his storytelling works, where you have all these incredibly short scenes, it feels like you get four times as many scenes in a Kenneth Lonergan movie as in a normal movie. And then they all add up together into something that you couldn't have seen in any individual moment. But they accumulate. That event felt kind of too big for that approach to me. Mm-hmm. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
Not really.
No, I think it does. I mean, I go the other way, but I think it does.
And then maybe too, the fact that when you find out what that event is halfway through, I feel like the camera starts zooming in on him and we start cutting to, like, freezing cold water and, like, the organ and the strings go way up. Like, it did feel like the movie really starts telling you when you're supposed to be hitting emotional rock bottom in pretty emphatic ways. And I'm not used to that from him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, I mean, I think clearly Katie has not gotten to this part of the movie based on her comments.
Yeah.
No,
Charlie has. Based on his comment.
No, Charlie watched the whole thing and told me I couldn't handle it. but yeah, I actually, it's nice that I don't feel especially spoiled for Manchester, even though people have been talking about it since Sundance. So it's, even now, I feel like you guys are doing a good job of, like, talking about the movie, but clearly there's, you know, stuff in store that everyone's done a good job of not revealing.
Mm-hmm. We got you.
Yes. Any final thoughts on Manchester?
I think Lucas Hedges is really great.
I like his panic attack sequence a lot.
And the fact that he it still sort of freaks me out that the only thing I knew him from was Slap. That terrible.
So I was just going to ask if you were one of those TV nuts who knew him from the Slap.
Yeah.
I'd never even heard of him, so I was like, okay, this is a new person for me.
I've written about this before. Yeah. I'm like, I can't believe that like two of our most exciting younger actors are the kid from Smash and the kid from the Slap. It's really quite something.
I do have some bad news insofar as he turns out to be the son of Pete Hedges, who made Pieces of April.
Oh. Right.
So there's a little bit of a problem there now.
Because now he's the success story. He's overcoming his meager roots.
That is definitely the right way to think about it.
Up from his bootstraps.
Yes.
Look how far he's come.
Like, you can see why he would want a new guardian. Sorry, that's mean.
You recently rewatched Pieces of April, right? Like,
the wounds are fresh.
No, I couldn't make myself. I just vented about it again.
Wow,
hills are way too high to climb.
Wow, considering how often you will watch things you didn't like again, that's really saying something.
Yeah, well, you're the person who made me watch it a second time only about a year ago, so...
That's when I watched it again, for the supporting actors thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it was shocking how much worse it was than I had remembered.
Yeah, that's going to go down in history for me as one of the strangest Oscar decisions of all time, when Patricia Clarkson had so many movies that year, and that's the one you want to honor her for?
Okay. Yep, exactly. Whoever was doing publicity for that movie, really, you know, hats off to them, because... They really did it.
This is definitely when Casey Affleck's character would say, I really don't want to talk about this right now.
Okay, reader questions. Let's do this. Since we were just discussing Manchester by the Sea, people are wondering if we have any comments about the many articles this year about separating art, the artists from their art, and all these like off-screen ugliness about various performers. Like Alexander says, what is your response to the increasing movement that films should be ignored and actors removed from consideration based on their off-screen behavior? Doesn't every movie demand that we ignore lead actors' off-screen realities? I would say...
I mean, in a perfect world, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm of two minds of this. I think if the work in question is not about any of the issues surrounding someone's off-screen life, I don't understand why people get so, like, boycott this movie. When they have very, very unfortunate ways in which they intermingle the off-screen behavior and the on-screen... narrative, then I understand why people get up in arms. So to me, the Casey Affleck stuff, I don't really understand why people say you should boycott a movie he stars in when the movie is about something that has absolutely nothing to do with anything that he's in trouble for.
Well, I think...
Did you feel like Birth of a Nation had more to do with what...
Yeah, because, I mean, rape is part of the narrative of that movie, and... You know, the treatment of women is so, like, people, even people who like the movie, like Manchester by the Sea is about grief and parenting and, like, I don't...
Yeah. I think the fact that Affleck doesn't direct Manchester by the Sea is one part of it. You're doing something like awarding an individual. It's tough to read about the allegations about Casey Affleck and then imagine him walking up onto stage three or four times across the course of an award season and accepting an award that basically everybody, you know, says you're great. You know what I mean? Like, that's sort of what it boils down for a lot of people. And I can see where you would not want to see that happen.
Right, but then what's the solution? Everybody gets background checks before they can make movies? Like, it's just very weird to me.
It is.
I agree. To me, Yeah, I mean, I think there's a sense that, like, it's not just that Casey Affleck did these things and we might reward him anyway. It's that he's kind of getting away with not having to talk about it at all. Like, the fact that he's going to skate through this award season and kind of accept all these accolades and rub elbows with a lot of people and, you know, presumably do a lot of press, and this keeps not coming up, he keeps not having to address it. That's where I feel like I have a problem. Like, Nate Parker shot himself in the foot, not just because these allegations came up, because he handled it really poorly. And if Casey Affleck can get out there and kind of have an answer and explain himself and express regret or anything else, like, then I think you can kind of weigh it. But having it not come up at all as he's continued getting patted on the back, that rubs me the wrong way.
Well, and he won't be asked about it, because that's the way that Hollywood publicity works.
Yeah, because he's going to be, you know, impressing people with his star power at all these meet and greets, and, you know, no one wants to make the star uncomfortable. And it is kind of crazy that Nate Parker got the third degree and Casey Affleck isn't going to.
Well, Nate Parker kind of volunteered himself for that, though, right? He didn't have to do that 60 Minutes interview.
No, yeah. Well, I mean,
definitely felt like he's always had a policy of talking about it, not hiding it, which seemed, you know, I mean, not to judge it all back up, but it seems totally tied to the fact that he still has a hard time understanding that what he did was really wrong. yeah, I mean, I obviously have made the choice to go see both of those movies, but it feels to me like, in both cases, like when Gabrielle Union said about Birth of a Nation, like, I personally think people should see it, but I also completely understand not seeing it, even for this reason. I certainly have movies that I don't go to because it's just too hard to imagine supporting that person. Like, I think it's a legitimate choice in either case, and I think beyond the movies at market right now, to be sending the signal that Hollywood should think twice before hiring some people who are going to have an increasing group of folks who don't want them to just be kind of untroubled in their professional rise by conducting themselves this way, and then it never happens. Like, that seems like the stronger message that's being sent, and that's how Hollywood thinks about stuff anyway. I think it's less likely, it's like you guys are saying, it doesn't seem like it's accumulating around Affleck in the same way, though there has been quite a bit of press just recently, and this movie's only barely rolling out right now, so we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my thing with that, and the reason that I draw such a... Because I'm even like, you know, I've had very, very negative feelings in my life toward Mel Gibson. But even, like, him and all his, like, off-screen troubles, like, I don't really understand, like, boycotting someone because you don't like them personally, unless what they're doing is that thing. Like, I guess I'm a separate the art from artist person. Like, I just think otherwise it's too, because where do you draw the line? It's like, because everybody's going to be offended by something, and then, you know, it's like that whole, you know, trying to make, like, and I realize these are very bad things we're talking about, sexual assault and rape, but, like, the type of idea that you shouldn't support artists because you're offended by them can have really dire consequences that don't have to do with crimes, you know?
Yeah, but that's, I mean, that's, like, say, a free speech issue versus supporting a criminal. Like, I think, for, you know, it can be really difficult to boycott art when people's behavior doesn't match what you want out of them, but I think that's really valid as compared to, I'm going to boycott this movie that has an idea I don't like.
Right, but I just think, like, people are always trying to demonize people that they don't agree with. So, like, my idea is that what I'm trying to say is it's kind of a slippery slope if you're going to, every time, like, someone has been accused of something, if you're going to boycott them, or anytime someone, then where does it end? Does it become, like, well, I heard this about this person with no basis in fact. Like, clearly these things have basis in fact, but a lot of things about stars that we hear, you know, this goes back to the beginning of Hollywood. Like, there's always this cottage industry around, like, blind items and, like, and how much of that is true, how much is... I guess I'm very sensitive about the whole sort of fake news problem that America has. Like, if we're going to... Every time we're offended by anything, if we're going to become outraged, I feel like we're not fighting the battles that really need to be fought. Because we're not concentrating, we're just upset about everything.
In the Casey Affleck and Nate Parker case, though, like, it's so very obviously true. Like, there's no question that these things happened.
But people have the same reaction to situations where there are questions. You know, there's this brouhaha right now about Last Tango in Paris, which was another question from a reader. You know, holy shit, there are limits to some. Anne says there are limits to, you know, the separation of art from its creators, and I absolutely agree. I mean, that whole story is so disgusting, but people are conflating it with, like, there's reasons to be upset about something without making it into something it's not. Like, they did not actually have sex on that set. Like, so if we're, it's one thing to be upset about something, it's another thing to, like, conflate it with other things. And I heard somebody comparing it to, like, oh, you're going to watch Bertolucci again, so I guess you're okay with watching snuff films. And I was like, what? Wait, what? So they didn't, this is, movies have simulated sex. It's not actual sex. And you're now you're saying if you watch a Bertolucci movie, it's like agreeing that snuff films are okay where they murder people on camera. Like, people get, the outrage cycle is really hard to keep up with, is what I'm saying.
I totally hear your point, and I am sympathetic to it, but I also think that another problem with that culture that you're talking about is that the slippery slope kind of argument can become so pervasive because the problems with bad reporting or with vehement reactions can suddenly be erase distinctions that really do exist between things that actually, you know, that actually did happen and actually do have a lot of import. And, like, I don't think you need to mandate anybody's particular, and I'm not saying you're doing that, but, like, we don't need to mandate anybody's particular response to that stuff. But I can see being concerned about a slippery slope into, like, where does this end? But I can also see being concerned that just because there's a slippery slope doesn't mean that you can't draw some distinctions and that we shouldn't feel like we can do that. That in its own way can impede the kind of cultural drift that you're talking about, of saying, like, I mean, the reporting in the last couple of days about the Bertolucci stuff has been so sloppy, mm-hmm. and a lot of people are just reading kind of crazy versions of a story that, as you say, is already bad enough mm-hmm. in the way that it had been reported several times, you know, up till now. But being concerned that that kind of distortion can kick in as an alibi for, like, being suspect of the whole enterprise of having sort of personal standards by which you will or will not support an artist, like, I feel like that's okay, even though my choice has been not that.
Recently. No, I mean, I agree with what you're saying. I just, I'm troubled at conflating. I feel like people need facts desperately in our in 2016. I'm just really worried about the idea that facts, you know, don't matter to anyone, no matter where they are on the political spectrum, you know. That's what I'm concerned about.
Yeah. But to the extent that those things continue to happen because people really do think that they can just get away with it and they're used to having the power of it's not going to come back on them, mm-hmm. even to send the signal that, like, getting away with that stuff is completely gross and has happened, as you said, for such a long time, but that there will be repercussions, and I think that's okay too.
Yes.
I'm going to thread the Casey Affleck needle and just continue to never see I'm Still Here.
Ah!
That's how I'm going to make myself.
That's a real sacrifice on your part, Joe.
You know, I hope everybody appreciates it.
You should give it up for Lent.
Yes.
I've never seen it, and I believe the back of my head is in it, because I did roundtable interviews for, Two Lovers? Was that the Joaquin Phoenix movie that he was promoting at the time?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Someone needs to report back on how my head looks, because I still never seen it.
General Oscar questions. Okay, so Sting asks, what newcomer Best Director nomination would most excite you?
Sting?
Sting?
Well, it's...
I'll take my time with my answer in that case.
It's not the Sting.
When he says newcomer, does he mean, like, first-time director or, like, someone who hasn't been nominated
before? I'm not sure what he meant, but I assume everybody's going to say Barry Jenkins for Moonlight.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty great. That would be pretty great.
Yeah.
And I think he's got a really good shot at a nomination.
I think Best Director is really interesting this year because so many of the most... buzzed about directors are would be first time Oscar nominees.
Yeah.
And then watch as Scorsese stomps down the road, but like
watch as Scorsese, Gibson, and Eastwood get nominated.
I might be beating the drum for Loving more than anybody else on the world because it feels like that movie's been totally forgotten. But I really love that movie, and I don't think there's a ton of buzz behind it. But if somehow Jeff Nichols could mount like a last minute push, I would be delighted.
I think it's lurking. I don't think it's as out of the. I don't think it's out of the. The conversation by any means, and I feel like, you know, there's still some time for it to make the pushes it needs to make. I have to say, I wish I had been more vocal at the beginning of the year about my expectations for Ruth Negga in that movie, because I feel like I was one of the few people who had seen her in anything, because I watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on ABC, and she was actually really good for an arc on that show, and when I saw that she was in Loving, I was like, oh, this will be a really good chance for her to do her thing. And now, of course, it's just like, well, it's easy for me to say now that it's like happened. And she's impressive. But like, please believe me, I was on that ship at least a year ago.
I am in the same boat as you there, Joe, because I mean, I don't watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. anymore, but she was one of the reasons
to
watch it initially.
Yeah, she's great.
What became of her character was just too embarrassing after a while, but for a while, she was really good in it.
Yeah.
Yuruchis wants to know, what's the number one film the Oscars might not recognize that we should all check out anyways before we make our lists?
American Honey.
Ooh. That's high on my list of things I still need to catch.
Boy, you really, whipped that one out there, Joe.
I was. That's my...
You were ready.
I was. It's because it's the only one in my top, 10 that is completely out of the conversation right now. Mm-hmm. Or maybe the only one in my top, 6. But it's so good, and it's completely not going to be the kind of a movie that the Oscars go for. But I think it's kind of phenomenal.
Mine is easily The Handmaiden, which, spoiler alert, will be all over my Film Bitch Awards, because I just thought it was brilliant.
Is it
on so many levels?
Is it eligible for foreign language?
No, it's eligible for everything else because it did, play in theaters within the year, but it was not submitted by South Korea, so it is not eligible for foreign film. Which who knows if it could have made it, but it's done well otherwise with awards in terms of best foreign film. The one thing it's not eligible for with Oscar.
This is so far outside of the Oscar conversation that it may as well not exist, but I loved Hunt for the Wilder People. And it's not just fun and cute. I feel like it's really insightful and thoughtful, and Sam Neill's amazing. And so, I watched that on iTunes months ago, so I'm sure it's still available easily. Mm-hmm. It's really great.
Yeah.
Nick?
I'm trying to open my list and I keep not getting there fast enough.
Here, while you...
This is a similar question. You can come back to us, Nick. So Carlos asks, I just saw Sing Street because of the love from you guys. It's great. So what other go-to charming, uplifting movies would you recommend?
Hunt for the Wilder People. Sorry, I just repeat myself.
No, and I'll say the one I was also going to say after American Honey is Little Men, which I found so interesting and so delightful, and
it is really charming. I'm not sure uplifting, but it's definitely charming.
Lifting, but I don't know, those two kids, there's bittersweet, that ends in a bittersweet place, but I think it's, I don't know, those are the kinds of things. Maybe this goes back to my thing where Manchester by the Sea didn't seem so sad by the end for me. Something like the way that Little Men ends, I get so kind of charmed by it that I walk away feeling happy, and then all of a sudden then that memory translates to the movie, and I'm just like, that's just a happy little movie. And it's like, well, no, it is a movie about people getting priced out of their homes and whatnot.
I would say for charming that people should see, but I assume they've already seen these two, I still think Love and Friendship was just a pure delight. And I also think that about Florence Foster Jenkins, which a lot of people don't like for some reason, but I watched it again, and I liked it the first time the second time was just as charming. Like, I could see that being something people would just watch whenever it comes on TV.
Yeah,
and just enjoy every time.
Yeah, I love it.
Real quick, charming one too. Morris from America, super tiny movie with not much of a imprint, but I thought it was this really lovely little coming of age movie. And Craig Robinson, of The Office, is really great.
Yeah, he's great in that. Yeah,
and I will say also the rare summer blockbuster that I thought was really great and worked was Pete's Dragon.
Hmm. I've heard that from a lot of people.
I thought it was fine. But yeah, a lot of people seem to really get into it.
Yeah.
This answer will sound ridiculous, but this Romanian movie called The Treasure, I've never seen a Romanian movie that wasn't about like how awful everything is.
Right.
And it's like this completely hilarious comedy about two grown brothers who's like, I think their father has just died, but there's this like, it might just be an urban legend that like he had a whole pot of gold that nobody knows about, and they have to go get it from like their backyard, but they don't actually know where it is before the house gets sold. And one of them's only doing it because he doesn't think the treasure's really there, but his kid really believes that it is, so he's just trying to humor the kid. It's so sweet and it's hilarious. And I think that that's soon going to be rentable on streaming and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
My answer for the other one is that there was that brief moment where people were acting like Sonia Braga might have a chance to get into the Oscar conversation for Aquarius, which always seemed kind of like a reach. But since that seems like well out of the realm of possibility now, I still hope a lot of people check that movie out.
Mm-hmm.
And also Julieta seems to kind of moving into also-ran status, or its reputation as kind of B-grade Almodovar keeps preceding it in conversations that I keep having. And it really, really isn't, I think. And I know Joe doesn't think so either.
Oh, I had no idea that Nick, that you liked it, because I know you're sometimes resistant to Almodovar. I went to hear him speak last night at MoMA, which was really like it was really great speech. It was really fun to hear him go on at length about various things. But I do have the typical response to Julieta, where I don't quite understand why it's the one that some people are really impressed by, because of his, like, the past 10 years, it's, to me, the clear winner since Volver is The Skin I Live In.
I did not like that one.
So, I mean, this past 10 years has not been impressive as the 10 years before that, but you know, everybody has had their ebbs and their peaks and valleys.
Yeah, I would say definite recommendation to see it if it ever makes it into theaters. Like, I know its release is like the very last minute of December 31st. Like, it's really holding on there to that last spot.
Well, I mean, I think it has a good shot at a Best Foreign Film nomination. So,
we will
definitely revisit it, because now I'm totally curious what everybody thinks about it. But that's a longer discussion when it comes out, because it's a movie you don't really want to spoil.
Well, and we'll want Charlie to be awake for that one so that he can tell us what he thinks about it.
Oh, strong opinions. All right.
Yeah.
I will speak Spanish, didn't you know?
I'm surprised.
I will say that I did not, like, somehow I had forgotten it or whatever. I'm sure I knew it at one point, that this was going to be the Meryl Streep Almodovar movie. That I somehow had not, but Almodovar was funny about
what?
That last night, because he keeps promising that he's going to make an English language movie. And he keeps backing out. And this was one where he was going to do an English language and one that Streep was interested in. But then he's like, I always end up feeling insecure about my English, so I always end up going back to Spain. But I have trouble imagining Meryl Streep doing it. And then I was like, who would play Julieta younger? And I'm like, oh no, it would be one of her daughters.
Oh, shit.
Oh no!
I just, you know, Mike in Canada, man after our own heart's ass. I just finished Out of the Blue watching John Krasinski and Cheryl Boone Isaacs announce last year's nominations, because that's the kind of nerd I am. Are there any acceptance speeches or nomination announcements that you watch regularly besides obviously Salma Hayek saying water?
Thank you. That was going to be that's really my favorite. God, has any movie ever gotten a less...
I'm never going to retract retract my FYC for Salma Hayek for just Best Supporting Actress for that 6 minutes. Like, there are so many emotional highs and lows. Like, it's... holy, it's like a Lars von Trier movie just watching her out there. Like, extremes.
That piece of shit water, apparently. Just spitting it onto the ground. The year that Sigourney Weaver announced the Oscar nominations, it was 2003, because the way she pronounced Jaimon Hansu was an adventure in and of itself.
I don't actually do that. I know a lot of you do, and I appreciate that you do. But I do think about them. I don't actually rewatch the Oscar nominations. And this is going so far back, but I remember it so vividly. I feel like it's worth mentioning. I will never in my entire life forget the sort of reaction of the press crowd for the announcement that Beauty and the Beast had been Oscar nominated for Best Picture.
Me too. Kathleen Turner.
Yeah. I will never forget that. I think it was because it was such a historic moment, and people were so genuinely thrilled that it had happened. Yeah. It was an exciting moment.
I'm really going to class up this conversation by saying I think often of Cheryl Boone Isaac saying Dick Poop was nominated for production. It was
a great moment.
It was so funny, and it didn't stop being funny for so long. And it highlighted Mr. Turner, which is a beautifully photographed movie. Mm-hmm. It was really a win-win.
Except for Dick Pope, who I can never think of anymore.
His response, though, in the Daily Mail was, "I've been called a lot worse."
Good for him.
I hadn't heard that response, and I love it.
I feel like I should have something to contribute here, but I keep going back to the year that we were in Ithaca and we didn't have TV. And I asked Derek if he would read it to me so that it would still... Like, I didn't want all the nominations to be on the screen at one moment and just, like, take them all in at once, because that's crazy. Yeah. I was like, can you read this to me in order? And he's like, do you want me to try to read it like Marcia Gay Harden would read it? Because apparently she did it. It's like, if you can do that, that would be fantastic. Like,
That is true love right there.
It was. I knew I had the right man.
Okay, two more questions and then we're done. Leia asks, are any of you going to see The Love Witch, Chronic, White Girl, Take Me to the River, or Always Shine?
Seen Always Shine.
I have seen Always Shine. It's really good.
Yeah, I agree.
I have not seen any of those, so I'm guilty of whatever she's Which angry about us not seeing.
I might have seen that. Which one is that?
Which one?
Take Me to the River? Is that the one about the gay kid who gets... Yes, I've seen that one.
Was it good?
Yeah, I mean, it's... Yes, I would say definitely see it. It's this gay teenager goes with his mom and her boyfriend back to his mom's, like, family in the sticks. It's really good. Robin Weigert plays his mom, and she's actually very good. Mm.
She's usually very good.
I was out of town for the week-long runs of both The Love Witch and White Girl in my city, so I was bummed to miss them both.
I want to catch up on both of those for sure. And then Chronic, I had never heard of until those Indie Spirit nominations were announced.
Same. I hadn't heard of it. Did it ever come out? I do not know.
Same.
It did. It came out this spring. It was that thing that you hate, Nathaniel, where it won a con prize more than a year ago, and then they buried it for a long time.
Oh, okay. I would love to see The Love Witch. It looks interesting, but I haven't seen it yet.
I only saw that trailer for the first time when I saw something at the new Draft House in Brooklyn. Mm. And so I was like, oh, this is one of those fun, like, vintage trailers that they always do. And it took me forever to realize that they were, like, advertising a brand new movie. But it was, like, the perfect atmosphere for that.
Okay, and finally, Troy asks, can you share your group's origin story? How did the four of you meet? Or did you all meet Nathaniel? I'm assuming he's the common link.
That is true. You are the common link.
You are the common link.
But how did we decide that the four of us were going to be the podcasters together? I don't remember that.
I don't even remember that either. You and Katie had done a couple of video things.
We did the videos, yes. Ages ago. When I lived very close to you.
Yes.
That was literally 7 years ago, because I've been to Brooklyn for 7 years.
Yeah.
Which is insane to think about.
And I had obviously known Nick through being linked to on the Film Experience, and that's how I sort of started reading Nick.
Mm. Well, Nick and I met in Ithaca, but that's a really long story. But it was a really fun weekend. And then
we all only met in person at Toronto last year.
That's exactly.
That's true. Katie, where did we meet? I know it was a junket. I don't remember.
I had read the film experience for a long time, so I probably introduced myself to you. I have no idea what it would have been.
I was like, this girl's staring at me. I don't know who she is.
What is going on?
But I don't remember.
You were my favorite movie blogger for a long time, so I assume I just took the opportunity to gush.
You were working for Screen Daily, was it?
Film Journal International.
Film Journal, yeah. But what was that junket? How long was that?
I have no idea.
Because I don't remember going to that many junkets, but it wasn't a junket.
I know. I was assuming it had been a screening. I didn't remember it being a junket at all.
No, it was a junket because we were sitting in a round table or whatever.
But junkets are how I made friends with so many people. So God bless them. Mm-hmm. I know we did the Cherie junket together. I don't think it was that, though. Where Michelle Pfeiffer was there.
Oh, that day. Burned into my memory.
I think I already knew you by then, though.
I know I met Nick out for dinner with Nathaniel after Nick had seen Get Low.
Yeah.
So random.
And then Katie and I met at the secret screening of Lincoln at New York Film Festival.
Yes, in the very crowded lobby of Aliceli Hall.
And then, a week later, she took me to the party for Flight after that movie premiered at New York Film Festival.
Yeah, we had a good run there.
We did. That was a good week. That was a fun week for us.
All downhill.
My first conversation in person with Nathaniel was about the Golden Bowl. Which he hadn't even seen.
Were we talking about Beatrix Aruna Pastor or something?
No, we were talking about Jenny Bevan because Derek and I were bitching about how awful the Golden Bowl was. It was 15 minutes into this road trip that Nathaniel and I wound up being on, even though we didn't actually know each other yet. And he's like, was that any good? I was like, no. And Uma Thurman just kept doing this thing where she kept clutching her pearls and fussing with her costume just because Jenny Bevan made her a really good one. And he looked at the boyfriend he totally just said Jenny Bevan. He doesn't even know. Been soulmates ever since.
Amazing. Yeah. And that same trip, I think we made a Beatrix Aruna Pastor joke.
Oh, totally.
And then it was besties forever. Yeah.
That's great.
Because who even knows who Beatrix Aruna Pastor is, you know?
You do, girl. Me too.
This was fun. Happy holidays, everyone listening.